Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com.
This is Carolyn Martin. Currently on display at the Rock Island Arsenal Museum is an exhibit which documents, interprets artistically, and preserves veteran stories from all five branches of the military. Their stories are then interpreted by artists through a variety of printmaking techniques. And here talking art with me today is Patrick Alley, the director of the Rock Island Arsenal Museum, Bill Albrecht, the decorated Vietnam War veteran whose story is one of those told in this exhibit, and Joseph Lappi, associate professor and chair of the art department at St. Ambrose University. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi.
So Patrick, let's start with you. How did this exhibit come about?
Yeah, so as far as my involvement with the project, about a little over a year ago, representatives from the project reached out to a group of Army Museum directors. There's 47 Army Museums spread across the country and globally. And so representatives from the project who had previously worked with some Army Museums kind of presented all of us the opportunity to have this exhibit on display at our institutions. And so within, I would say, an hour of receiving information about the exhibit, I reached out to the organizer of EVAC, or Experiencing Veterans and Artists Collaboration, to explore the options for getting it here to the Rock Island Arsenal Museum.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say the purpose of it is?
So the purpose of the project is, at the end of the day, to kind of bridge the civilian-military gap. I've seen a number of veterans art projects, and a lot of times it's veterans creating the art pieces. What struck me about this particular exhibit and this particular project was the way in which they went about it. So they interviewed the veteran, and then they provided that that interview to the artist. And so you actually have the military story, and then you have a civilian artist interpreting that story. And so you really get some interesting interpretations based on that.
Mm-hmm. And the majority of the time, they tried to pair the veteran story with an artist from their same community.
When they could. So what the project really wants to do is the project builds. So they had, you know, an initial grouping of veterans and pieces of artwork. And then every time this goes into a new community, their hope is that a veteran from that community takes part in the project and in turn an artist, of course. And so that they can add that to the exhibit as it travels, and then also make that local connection, which I think is really important for this project, that this is a story of a veteran from the Quad Cities community.
Mm-hmm. And that process of storytelling is really, you know, important to this project. Being able to describe something that happened to you, whether verbally or in writing, is a necessary component of that healing process.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's interesting because you have stories told from World War II through today. You have all five branches represented within the art pieces. And then you also have kind of different phases of an individual's life told. So you have some veterans talking about when they were actually serving. You have one story in particular is about a World War II veteran who landed at Anzio in 1944. And he talks about landing on the beaches there. And then you also have veterans who talk about their post-service life, what it was like coming back after Vietnam, for example, and what they experienced in the following years, decades afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So these stories stretch from World War II up to current time, up to Iraq and Afghanistan.
They certainly do. Mm-hmm. So you get a really broad look at military service, but you also, throughout the 15 pieces we have on display, a lot of common threads too.
Mm-hmm. How many pairs of stories and prints are in this exhibit?
So there's 15 in total, again, ranging from World War II through today, all five branches represented within those pieces.
Mm-hmm. The common themes seem to be, you know, despite these service members working in vastly different times under vastly different circumstances with different types of equipment, being in different parts of the world, when they came back, there was this common thread to their story. It's a very challenging time to come back and become re-immersed in civilian life.
Absolutely, and each piece is paired with an excerpt from the oral history that was taken, and you read through those and you get that. through every single one of those excerpts.
Mm-hmm. Now, the EVAC project, that's a nonprofit organization.
It is. So it's a 501c3. They're based out of Ohio. It was originally a partnership between the Ohio Arts Council and the Northwest Ohio Veterans Oral History Project. Again, they have since expanded to start working with, obviously, veterans outside of Ohio, as well as artists. So the artists are from 23 states, one outside of the U.S., and then, again, they've worked with veterans from across the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, the museum is hosting an artist and curators panel on Friday evening, January 17th from 5 to 7 p.m. What will happen there?
So the panel discussion will include the curators from the project, who are also the organizers, as well as they'll be bringing in Joseph Lappi, who's an artist here in the Quad Cities, and he'll be speaking at that panel as well, talking about the project itself, the genesis of the project, what they do, their mission, and then kind of the process of working with both the artists and the veterans as they develop the art pieces and the impact that this exhibit has made in various communities.
So that's a perfect time, really, for people to come see the exhibit. But if they can't make it on Friday night, it's open until through mid-February.
It is. So the exhibit itself is open when the museum opens. So the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from noon to 4, and the exhibit itself will run through February 15th.
Mm-hmm. And being on the Arsenal, there's something very special about that too, just simply being in that historic old building.
Absolutely. So you'll be reading stories about veterans while someone in uniform may be walking right past you, or you'll pass them coming in. So honestly, this exhibit has been displayed at Army museums and is planned to be displayed at places like the Pentagon, 10th Mountain Museum in Fort Drum, Walter Reed Hospital. So I think those sorts of venues really play well to this exhibit, because you're not only telling the veteran story, but you're also telling it in a place where people are experiencing the military.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bill Albrecht, you're a Vietnam War veteran who is originally from Rock Island.
Yes, I am.
Yep, and you are quite decorated. You received 3 Purple Hearts, I believe 3 Silver Stars and 5 Bronze Stars for your service in a remote outpost called Firebase Kate. And that was obviously an extremely difficult event. Can you describe for us what happened there briefly?
The awards and decorations received were over the period of the entire tour, not one action. Firebase Kate was on the set on the darn near on top of the border between Cambodia and South Vietnam, in the Central Highlands, in the Southern Central Highlands. And it was a fire base that led support to a larger Special Forces, Green Beret, if you will, camp. And around it was about 150 mountain yards, which would be the equivalent of the American Indians. They were the Native Hill people of Vietnam. We, Special Forces, trained them, equipped them, advised them, and led them in combat. So they were our kind of our security force, because artillery can't shoot and defend themselves at the same time if they come under attack. So we had another 27-30 American artillery people there too. My job when I got there on 28 October 1969 was to take over the security element as a young captain and make sure that this base was secure in case it got attacked and the artillerymen had to do their jobs. Unfortunately, we were dead set in the path of about a couple of NVA regiments that were on their way to the larger camp of Bu Prang, Special Forces Camp, and I got there on the 28th, and that night we were hit. And the battle raged for 5 days, and I lost a lot of people. And we got to the end point where we couldn't get any more helicopter support in because they were literally blowing them out of the sky. They had brought in some anti-aircraft weaponry, some 37 millimeter, and they couldn't get us any ammo. They couldn't get us any water, and water was phenomenally crucial. And they couldn't get us any people. They couldn't get people within several kilometers of us because we were faced with about 6,000 enemy. But we held on as long as we could, and then when we couldn't hang on anymore, I made the decision that we had to abandon Firebase Kate and we were going to attempt a breakout through enemy lines. And that is the juxtaposition story right there, and that's exactly what we did, and by the hand of God, that night, and we did come under attack. They came up the north end to sweep through the fire basin. I'm sorry, the south. We went off the north, and we did run into them, but a smaller part of them, and we were able to negotiate and fight our way through it. And when the again by the hand of God, I only lost one man.
And I read that you made these difficult decisions. You went through this really traumatic experience as the youngest Green Beret captain. You were 21 years old.
Just 21. Yeah, I was 21. Gosh, I got to Vietnam in mid-August, turned 21 in, turned 21 mid-August, and I was promoted captain the end of August. You could do that back then. There was such a demand for company grade officers that the accelerated promotions in between. And you had to be 19 to graduate from officer candidate school, which I just was. And so that's how I ended up as that young of a captain. And the fact that I was in special forces, that was even another step in that direction. So, yeah, it was quite a deal. Quite a deal. This is my first time in combat. But keep in mind, I'd been trained. And then I went on from there to another combat unit. And we continued the fight until I was wounded the last time. And then they put me in the rear.
Well, your story in this art exhibit now talks about several things, but it starts with the anger that you felt after you returned home in 1970, how you initially didn't believe that your war experience had changed you, but that you were, in fact, deeply affected by it.
Very effective. I just didn't recognize it. I mean, I was I went to high school, Allman High School, class of 66, and I was voted most fun to be with.
You were... And, well, I don't doubt that at all.
And I was not that fun to be with when I came home.
But you sought refuge in other veterans who had had similar experiences.
Exactly. It was a very, very difficult time to be a veteran, a very difficult time. And I'm not whining, I'm not complaining, I'm just telling you the way it was. It was a hard time. Let me give you two quick stories, as we used to call them, war stories. A very good friend of mine, John Catherman, who's a teacher in Moline, he came over from Vietnam, he served proudly, and he served with honor. And let me make this point really, really clear. Serving with honor. And he did, and he, the vast majority of veterans did when they did their time in Vietnam. And he was sitting in a bar having a beer, waiting for his wife to get off work and meet him. And he had just come out of the jungle. It was a Friday night, and he had just come out of the jungle. He had a deep tan. Because he had been in combat and he had been with an infantry unit. And a guy looked at him, it was February, and he says, "Hey, nice tan, man, where'd you get that?" And John said, "I thought about it." And I says, "I just got back from Florida." He said, "Not because I was ashamed, but I just didn't want to get into it. I didn't want to go there. I just wanted to be left alone and live my life. I don't want to go there." And that's the way, unless you served, that's the way we felt. I didn't want to have to explain everything to you. And then the other story is in 1996 when I was at a Special Forces reunion at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I ran into Bo Greitz, who was a colonel, and he was a legend in Special Forces. And I had met him briefly in Vietnam, and I went up to him, I said, "Colonel Greitz," I said, "Bill Albrecht," I said, "we met in the Trang back in 1970. And he looked at me, he says, "You were with 5th Group?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Welcome home." And it struck me like a bolt of lightning. This is 1996. I came home in 70. This is the first person, this is the first time anybody had said welcome home to me. And I made it a point from then on to say that to every Vietnam veteran. And not just me. I mean, I didn't come up with this, but other people too. And if you ever want to say anything good to a Vietnam veteran, tell them welcome home. Because we certainly didn't get that when we did come home.
Mm-hmm. This many years later, so far after the war, how did seeing the prints that were created in response to your story, how did that make you feel?
It kind of floored me a bit. I was really taken aback. I did not know what to expect whatsoever. And I remember looking at Joseph's, and at first it was very puzzling to me. And then the picture started getting clearer and clearer, and I saw pretty much where he was going and what he was doing. And then he provided a kind of an explanation as to his thought process. And then it became crystal clear. And I was amazed at his interpretation and the medium that he used to to send this message out. And it was about coming home, and it was about the people I served with, and it was about my fallen brothers. He kind of encapsulated the whole thing, as well as the other gentleman in what he came up with.
Right, because there were two prints
made
in association with your story. And one important part of your story that Joseph Lappy, we're going to talk with him in just a second, that he really illustrated is that you talked about coming home and shutting the closet door and packing all your emotions and everything away behind that. But despite wanting to keep that closed, it wouldn't close all the way. And periodically, it would just burst open, rupture open, and you wouldn't know when that was going to happen exactly. And part of that kind of catharsis was you started to write.
I did. It would creep out. The double lock closet that I had secure would crack, and things would come out time to time. And then it wasn't like a big flashback and some moment that I couldn't do anything. No, it was something I had to process. I remember that happening, and I had to process that thought and that memory and remember. I had to, as well as any other veteran has been through this. This is a common occurrence with veterans. And after I did, I tucked it away and put it back in the closet, footlocker, whatever you want to call it. But the door just wouldn't go back closed all the way. Mm-hmm. And then in 2008, it burst open and everything came out. And I sat down to write.
Yeah, and you wrote very well, obviously, because it culminated in the publication in 2015 of your memoir, Abandoned in Hell, The Fight for Vietnam's Firebase Kate.
True.
Mm-hmm. How and so there are a variety of different art forms that are soothing and that are helpful. Obviously, besides the visual arts, writing is an art form that sounds like it was necessary for you. It was published by Penguin Random House. How long did it take to write, and how did you find an editor and publisher? How did that work?
I had no intention of writing a book. Absolutely no intention whatsoever. I just wanted to write down what had happened for my family, for my friends, because I'd been asked numerous times, because it had made the media, it had made the news back in the day, and a lot of people knew about it. I never intended it, and a very good friend of mine, Ken Moffitt, was in a situation. He read this, and he said, "Bill, there's a book, a documentary, and a movie in this thing." And he and I set out, and we were fortunate enough to get a hold of Marvin Wolf, a really, really good author, Vietnam veteran, and we cooperated, and we came up with this book. And let me tell you, Marvin is a tremendous researcher and a tremendous writer, and he had a publisher, and he had an agent, and his agent knew a publisher, I should say, and it's very hard to get a book published, but when it was our time, we had three offers in a week. So we were very fortunate, obviously, with the biggest one. Mm-hmm. And things were fortunate. All I really wanted to do was tell the story.
Mm-hmm. A documentary was also made about your experience.
Yes, it was. It's called Escape from Firebase Kate. It's on Amazon, actually. Mm-hmm. And the only part I have in that is that I was interviewed. But he did a really, really good job of going out and finding the guys, as Marvin did, and interview them on camera. And they each tell their story. They're part of the story. It's quite moving. Mm-hmm.
That was the filmmaker, Paul Kakert. Mm-hmm. Now, Joseph Lappy, you teach at St. Ambrose and are chair of the art department there and created one of the prints that is paired with Captain Albrock's story.
All of those are true.
Describe your work for us.
Well, it's a four-color relief print. And the colors are yellow, or kind of a bronzy yellow, a purple, kind of a peachish pink, and then a dark sepia, and then white, which is just the color of the paper. There are, at the bottom you see the top of a head. Outside of the head is coming a large number of bubbles, some of them being these bronzy yellows, some of them being the purple, representing the members of the forces that Bill worked with. Behind them you see striping. The striping is to deal with the awards that he received for his service. And behind the head is also a house, kind of representing this welcoming home, but also trying to get into this world of not a lot of people can experience what he or the millions and millions of military members, men and women, what they go through. And so for me, the important thing about an autobiography or a biography is that you can look at it and make it your autobiography and biography. So there's no world where the majority of us could ever anticipate or experience what active combat vets and current members of the military go through. But we can experience trauma. We can experience the connectivity of brother and sisterhood. We can experience loss. We can experience all of that in different ways. And so the way that I was trying to, I'm making this much longer winded than necessary. it was really meant to just be a welcoming image, that was recognizing Bill, but also making it more than just him. And he did that with the interview that I listened to as well.
Well, I imagine it was a challenging task, really, to artistically interpret another person's story, especially a story that is one of anguish.
Well, I don't know if the anguish part was difficult. I think that the part that was difficult is that he and I had never met before. And so how do I do justice not only to his truths, but again to the truths of everybody? So I felt that that was more problematic than dealing with anguish. Again, kind of my pedigree is dealing with sorrow and anguish and sadness and death. Like that's a thing that I know well. But being able to respectfully speak to it in a way that, again, isn't about Bill and isn't about me, but is about all of us. That's the difficulty.
Yeah, it's a really unique way of presenting his story, I think. And one aspect of art that I love is that, you know, 100 people could look at the same piece of art, the same creation, and interpret it differently. Because when I looked at what you made, instead of the outline of Bill's head being in front of the house, I thought the house had this giant, like, crater in it where the door had been, you know, like, ripped out by an explosion or something. Because he kept talking about in his story about he was trying to keep his emotions hidden and shut up behind the door, and then the door just blew open. And then you can see these bubbles kind of rising up, which I thought were his thoughts. And some of the bubbles, you'll see outlines of people inside, too.
Right, yeah. So each bubble represents one of the members, assuming I counted correctly, of Firebase Kate. Mm-hmm.
And there were some symbolic aspects to the colors that you chose, too.
Sure, yeah. Well, and just to briefly go back on what you just said about looking at different interpretations, I do think it's really important as an artist. My job is to be able to correctly... I don't just get to present something to the world and let it go. My job is to be able to present something that even if people have different visual interpretations, they can get to the core of what it means. So what you interpreted wasn't incorrect by any means. Like, that is a big part of it. I was trying to keep any sort of element of violence out of it. So, like, the explosion might not be the case, but... this idea of memory and love and unity and creativity is what makes us is a very big important part of it. Going into the colors in a way to respect Bill's personal story, and knowing that not all of these awards, the Purple Hearts, the Silver Stars, and the Bronze Stars were from this particular thing, but also to be able to pay homage to the man himself, the colors were a way to kind of subtly integrate that. Mm-hmm. So having that bronzy yellow for the Bronze Stars, having the purple for the Purple Hearts, and having the white interpreting as the silver was important. And the pink and the brown just look nice together. So, like, trying to get things that are pretty together is a nice component as well.
Mm-hmm. The piece you created for this exhibit is visually quite different from a lot of your other work. And you told me earlier that you did that because you didn't want it to be necessarily about sadness. Instead, you wanted it to be about reconnection and love. That you wanted those themes to shine through.
Correct. Yeah. So, again, just going back to this idea of what makes us us. And creativity is certainly a component of it. So writing, music, theater, art, whatever that creative component is, so art as therapy, is really important. And in a lot of the work that I do on my own, it tends to be much more illustrative, right? Like, it's illustrating a pattern. It's saying that hope is suffering, but that suffering is what evolves us. And veterans know that already, right? Like, I don't need to be redundant. So coming into this, I could say, as a civilian, yeah, we all get the understanding that things are difficult. Nobody wants to hear that. The thing that I can offer as a civilian and as an artist is love and support. And to say that creativity is an outlet, and that you are loved, and that you are a real person. Mm-hmm. And so if I had gone the way I normally draw, it'd be very, very sad, and everybody would have been downer. And this was an attempt not to have that be the case.
What techniques did you use to create this print?
This is a relief print. So it's a four-color linoleum block print. Each color is carved out of a separate piece of linoleum that are then registered and printed through a printing press. I use hand gouges to carve away the places that I don't want the color to be. And then the area that's remaining is the space that gets inked up. Mm-hmm. So this was all by hand in this case.
And you had to create multiple models for this, or multiple woodcut. Yeah, it's not woodcut.
Well, it's very similar to woodcut. Mm-hmm. It's linoleum. So it's like, if you think about the thing that we're on carpet, but the floor linoleum, like a kitchen linoleum or anything like that. That's, take off the shellac, strip it of any sort of pattern, and that's more or less what it is. It's soft, it's pliable, has no discernible grain, but the process is the exact same as a wood carving.
Mm-hmm. Why would you choose linoleum over wood?
It's easier to cut. So wood cut has grain. Anything that you have, you can have engravings, like wood engravings where you would cut the cross section of a tree. But mostly we use planks. So think of a plank that you would get from Home Depot or Menards. And so there's a discernible grain. And in this case, I was dealing with a lot of rounded things. And carving rounded things with the discernible grain isn't impossible. But it takes a lot longer. And initially I had planned on doing this letterpress. So I was going to send, and I had the drawings. I was going to make it into a polymer plate. And that just wasn't feasible. And so the linoleum allows for an ease in curvilinear marks, organic marks, and it's a little bit faster to carve. So it's not as time-consuming. It doesn't dull your blades as much.
Mm-hmm. So those were good technical reasons to choose that, really.
It was a technical decision, mm-hmm. if you want perfect honesty. Yeah. I mean, I was going with a relief print process regardless. The reason it ended up being linoleum was for technical cost and mm-hmm. production.
We'll provide a link on our website to your work, because you have some beautiful pieces that are on your own on your own website.
Thank you.
But people in the community may recognize you also from your 2018 Figge exhibition, Personal Mythologies.
Yeah, 2018. So I was invited to have a exhibition on the fourth floor of the Figge. I created a new piece specifically for that. That was about 16 feet tall and about 120 feet long. And then showed some of my earlier carvings and my books. So artist books and bookmaking are my real passion. So there's a lot of the books there too.
And you have an MFA in book.
I do. I have an MFA in interdisciplinary book and paper arts from Columbia College in Chicago.
Well, Patrick Alley, Bill Albrecht, and Joseph Lappy, it's been so great talking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The traveling exhibit, Experiencing Veterans in Artist Collaboration, or EVAC, is on display at the Rock Island Arsenal Museum through February 15th. The museum is free and open to the public, although an ID is required for entrance onto the island, which you can obtain at the visitor's center. An EVAC Artists and Curators panel discussion will also be held this Friday evening, January 17th, from 5 to 7 p.m. So check your calendar and come see this thought-provoking exhibit. Additional daily hours are Tuesday through Saturday from noon until 4 p.m. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK. Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell. Thank you.